Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
Everyone, welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Mervin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And it is our mid-month check-in episode. So hopefully you all are having a great month of May. Happy Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. Rira, how's your APAM going?
It's been exhausting.
What have you been up to?
Well, aside from reading like 4 to 5 books at a time, yeah, like that and a couple of other events.
That's been a lot of books.
I know.
What else are you reading?
I just finished Vanessa Hua's A River of Stars, which is coming out in August. We got an ARC from, was it Riverhead Books? I'm not sure, but but they sent us an ARC and I finished it in a couple days and it was a really, really good book. So
Cool. Hopefully
we'll get Vanessa on this podcast and we get to talk to her more about it.
Let's get on that. You're also reading our May book club pick.
The Leavers
by Lisa Koh, you've read that already, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Another book that I'm reading right now is I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara. I think that's how you pronounce her name, but she's not Asian. But it is a book about the Golden State Killer who they just arrested the suspect.
Right. She was the wife of Patton Oswalt, right?
Yes.
The late wife.
Late wife. Yeah. And she's the creator of True Crime Diary. So,
Wow. Yeah,
it was really sad that she wasn't able to finish the book on her own, like her research team had to finish it for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really scary book. Like, I can't read it at night. I read it at night like a couple times and it's terrifying because it's about a serial rapist killer. But that is what I am reading right now. Marvin, what are
and
you
you're,
reading?
You're a naturally anxious person to begin with.
I know. I'm very paranoid. But you're reading stuff, Marvin.
Yeah, well, I am halfway through The Leavers, actually.
Yay.
I picked it up. It's actually pretty, like, I was expecting a more, I guess, dark and intense story, but it's actually not that heavy. It's a lot more funny than I thought it would be.
Yeah, definitely a lot more dark humor than you'd expect.
Yeah, a lot of dark humor and a lot of but not a lot of, like, I expect it to be, like, a story of struggle and, like, going against the system, but it's really just more about people dealing with stuff.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sure we'll go into more detail in our end-of-month book discussion episode, but I'm having a good time with it. I'm to the part right now where it switches perspective to the mother.
To Polly. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it does a really interesting, like, it weaves together the perspectives really well, I think. Because you're, like, jumping back in time and...
Yeah. I especially like the Chinese restaurant scene.
Oh, yeah,
where the two adoptees meet for the first time. And it just reminded me of my time in D.C. taking some people to actual Chinese food for the first time.
Actual Chinese food. You're like, oh, this isn't your normal orange chicken.
Like, yeah, like explaining how, like, Chinese food is way more nuanced than
that
than what they're used to. But yeah, I'm eager to finish out the rest of the book.
You're also reading The Poppy War.
Yeah, I picked up The Poppy War.
We just announced that book like in our last episode.
Yeah, and, longtime listeners will know that I enjoy the genre of fantasy, especially this new wave of Asian-inspired fantasy. And so The Poppy War is inspired by, you know, Chinese mythology, warring states. Some of the mythological aspects of the book is taken directly from Chinese mythology. So it's been fun so far. I'm only about a couple chapters in.
I just got Rainbirds by Clarissa Gonallen. And I'm really happy about that because I am the first person to check it out of my library.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was the one who called it in and was like, do you have this book? Can you order it? Because I need it.
Do they still do the card things where like you, how you sign your name out in the card on the cover?
No, they have a barcode, so everything's digitalized.
Obviously, I haven't stepped foot in the library in probably almost.
Should get a library card. Support your local libraries. That was our PSA about libraries.
But yeah, don't forget. Again, our May book club pick is The Leavers by Lisa Ko. If you've already finished the book and have thoughts about it, or have things you want to us to bring up during a podcast, please sound off on our Goodreads forum. You can find the Books and Boba Goodreads group by searching Books and Boba on Goodreads. But yeah, let's get into the episode, starting with new releases.
And our first new release of the second half of... Actually, this book came out in the first half of May, but I forgot it. So now we're including it in this episode. And it's Shadow Child by Rana Reiko Rizzuto. It released on May 8th, and it was published by Grand Central Publishing. Shadow Child opens in 1970s New York when Hannah Swanson returns to her apartment to find her estranged twin sister Kay unconscious in the shower after apparently being strangled. In an attempt to help revive her sister from her coma, Hannah recounts stories about their fraught childhood in 1950s and 1960s Hawaii. From there, the novel interweaves stories from the perspective of their Japanese-American mother, who endures the horrors of Japanese internment camps and the bombing of Hiroshima. And that is Shadow Child by Rana Reiko Rizzuto.
Next up, we have The Storm by Arif Anwar, released on May 15th, published by HarperCollins. Inspired by the 1970 Bola cyclone, in which half a million people perished overnight, The Storm interweaves five love stories that together chronicle 60 years of Bangladeshi history. We begin with Shahryar, a recent PhD graduate, as he desperately finds a way to stay in the U.S. with his 9-year-old daughter, Anna. That story intersects with those of a Japanese pilot, a British doctor stationed in Burma during World War II, and a privileged couple in Calcutta who leaves everything behind to move to East Pakistan following the partition of India.
You know, there's a lot of books that like interweaves like multiple perspectives of different characters in different locations.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually really like that style of writing for some reason.
It's like the book version of Love Actually.
Love Actually, it was a terrible movie.
Oh.
Let's not use that as a...
Some people love it.
Well, those
people... Some people really love it.
Well, those people have a very contrasting taste from my movie taste. Next up is The Ensemble by Asia Gable. It released on May 18th, and it's published by Riverhead Books. Britt is the second violinist, a beautiful and quiet orphan. On the viola is Henry, a prodigy who's always had it easy. The cellist is Daniel, the oldest and an angry skeptic who sleeps around. And on first violin is Jana, their flinty, resilient leader. Together, they are the Vanessa Quartet. The novel follows these four young friends navigating the cutthroat world of classical music and their complex relationships with each other as ambition, passion, and love intertwine over the course of their lives. Oh my God, I love books about musicians. I feel like I would really love this book, considering that like half of my family is in classical music.
Really? It's interesting. Next up, we have Shanghai Story by Alexa Kong. Released on May 18th. Set in Shanghai during World War II, the novel follows one man and one woman who strive to hold on to their dreams as the communists rise and the shadow of Japan closes in. Clark Yuan joins the KMT, hoping to play his part to make China a better place, but later questions how much he must sacrifice to reach the greater good. Meanwhile, Eden Levine, a Jewish refugee who is hoping to build a new life in Shanghai, finds herself at a crossroads after a heinous crime shocks the international community. Cool. This takes place in one of my favorite time periods, which is pre-World War II Shanghai, because have you ever seen Kung Fu Hustle?
Yes.
It's that aesthetic.
Yeah, it's that aesthetic.
It's a time of organized crime and corrupt officials. It's like post-war LA.
What did they call Shanghai back then? Like the Paris of the East?
The Pearl of the Orient.
Oh, the Pearl of the Orient. Well, I thought it was like Paris of the East, but I guess like same definition in a way.
It was a time when East and West like collided, but in like the best ways aesthetically. Like that's when you have like Chinese like jazz and that's actually where the qipao became prominent in Chinese fashion.
Yeah. Maybe check it out. Next up is Cult X by Fuminori Nakamura. It's translated by Kalo Almany. And it releases on May 22nd, and it's published by Soho Crime. When Toru Narazaki's girlfriend Ryoko disappears, he tries to track her down, despite the warnings of a private detective he's hired to find her. The one concrete clue to Ryoko's whereabouts seems to be a cult led by a charismatic guru with a revisionist Buddhist scheme of life, death, and society. Narazaki plunges into the secretive world of the cult, ready to expose himself to any of the guru's brainwashing tactics, if it means he can learn the truth about Ryoko. But the cult isn't what he expected, and he has no idea of the bubbling violence beneath its surface. This book was recommended to us by a couple of Goodreads members in our forums, like a couple of months ago. And they were like, oh, wait for this book to come out, like when it's translated into English. So now it's finally out.
Might check it out. It reminds me of True Detective in a way.
Yeah,
where it's
kind of
investigating into like a cult. But you know, in Japan, which is cool.
Cults are scary. I've watched way too many crime documentaries about them, so scary.
I feel like you do this to yourself.
Yeah.
Next up is a book about unrealistic names, apparently. From Twinkle with Love by Sanya Menon.
That was sarcasm.
Releases on May 22nd, published by Simon Pulse. Aspiring filmmaker and wallflower Twinkle Mehra has stories she wants to tell and universes she wants to explore. If only the world would listen. So when fellow film geek Sahil Roy approaches her to direct a movie for the upcoming summer festival, Twinkle was all over it, especially since it gives her the opportunity to be closer to Neil, Sahil's twin brother and her longtime crush. When Mystery Man N begins emailing her, Twinkle is sure it's Neil, finally ready to begin their happily ever after. The only slightly inconvenient problem is that in the course of movie making, she's fallen madly in love with the irresistibly adorable Sahil.
So this is from the author of When Dimple Met Rishi.
Is this the sequel or is this like a spiritual sequel?
What does spiritual sequel mean?
Like, is it like
I would say
a
it's...
direct, like, is this, because I didn't read when Dimple Met Rishi, so are these characters from that book or is
no,
this like
similar... I would say it's more, like, I think it's in the same...
It's in the same...
Like, I think Twinkle is Dimple's cousin. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on this.
So it's like in the cinematic universe.
Cinematic
universe. the literary universe.
It is a companion novel to When Dimple Met Rishi. I'm actually reading that right now, and I'm like halfway through it. It's really fun.
It sounds cool, and I've always liked the covers. Much like Maureen Gu does good covers. Sanya Menon has her books have really great covers as well.
I always wondered how many iced coffees they had to go through to like get that perfect shot of you've probably only seen the front cover, but when you open up the book jacket, you see Dimple throwing iced coffee at Rishi, and I'm like, how many iced coffees did they go through to get that one perfect shot? I would like to know if anybody knows the answers out there.
Congrats to Sanya Menon for her. This is her second book?
Yes, this is her second book.
Yeah.
Next up is Like a Mother by Angela Garbez. Releases on May 29th, and it's published by Harper Wave. In Like a Mother, Angela offers a rigorously researched and compelling look at the physiology, biology, chemistry, and psychology of pregnancy and motherhood, informed by research, reportage, and her own experience. With a journalist's curiosity and discipline, a mother's urgency, and a food writer's insatiability, she explores the science behind the pressing questions women have about a number of subjects, including postpartum hormones, breast milk, and miscarriage.
Cool.
Sounds like motherhood. A book that every pregnant lady might enjoy.
Put that on the top of your list.
It sounds funny.
Yeah, I was when you started explaining, I thought it would be like a Tiger Mom book again, but it's...
No. I think it's more along the lines of one day we'll all be dead and none of this will matter.
Next up, we have Front Desk by Kelly Yang. Releases on May 29th and published by Scholastic. Front Desk tells the story of 10-year-old Mia Tang. Every day, Mia manages the front desk of the Cali Vista Motel while her parents clean the rooms. She's proud of her job. She loves the guests and treats them like family. When one of the guests gets into trouble with the police, it shakes Mia to the core. Her parents, meanwhile, hide immigrants in the empty rooms at night. If the mean motel owner, Mr. Yao, finds out, they'll be doomed.
Sounds like a cute middle grade novel with a very serious topic.
But it's cool that because Scholastic mainly does like children's and middle grade literature, right? And it's cool that they're touching on these more heavy subjects, and it's good to at least get kids thinking about those types
of stuff. Is Babysitter's Club Scholastic? It is, right?
I've seen it on, I think, well, yeah, because you used to be able to order them on the book clubs.
Scholastic's been like on a roll for a number of years when it comes to important stories about young people.
Yeah.
And speaking of Scholastic, our final book on this list is also a Scholastic book.
Nice.
And it's Crossfire by Fonda Lee, and it's the sequel to XO. It releases on May 29th, and the summary goes, Earth's century of peace as a colony of the alien race Zree has been shattered. As the alien-run government navigates peace talks with the human terrorist group Sapiens, Donovan tries to put his life back together and return to his duty as a member of the security forces. But when the Zree's... Okay, I'm totally mispronouncing it, but... Zree's home planet orders its people to withdraw for strategic reasons, Earth becomes vulnerable to a takeover from other alien races. As a galactic invasion threatens, Donovan realizes that Sapiens holds the key that could stop the pending war. And in order to save humankind, all species on Earth will have to work together. I remember we talked to Fonda about XO briefly.
Yeah. She did have... she's been on a roll on Twitter lately. And she had this really great thread about the distinctions between YA and adult. You guys have time, she'd go check it out.
Because like one of the things that she mentioned in that thread, I think it was that thread, was that books that have teen protagonists, that doesn't automatically make the book YA.
Yeah, it's more about the intended audience of your writing. Because there's some things that have teen or young protagonists, but the matter of the content is not something you might want like 14-year-olds to read.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of dystopian YA novels out there, but you really don't want, like, a 13-year-old girl to read, like, really grisly descriptions of, like, of war crimes and stuff like that. So, yeah it's a very important thread, and I recommend people check it out.
But congrats to Fonda Lee for the release of her book. Now we're just waiting for Jade War. I need that Jade War. And that'll do it for the May new releases. Again, if we missed anything or if anything new comes up, we'll try to pick up the next episode. Or if not, please help. Please sound off in our Goodreads forums to let us know what else is coming out. But next up, let's go over some book news. There's been quite a bit of action in the book publishing world, especially relating to Asian and Asian American authors.
Because it's our month.
It's our month.
It's our month.
Is that how it works? They give us more deals during our month, too?
I bet. I bet.
Congratulations to Aisha Saeed for making it to the New York Times Children's Bestsellers list with her new book, Amal Unbound.
Which we covered in our last episode. That was a new release.
Yeah.
Yes.
So congrats.
Congrats. Next up, Orchard from Scholastic bought world rights to Muan Khan's book Wish, which will be illustrated by Victor Nai. And it's inspired by actual events in the author's life. The book is about one family's search for a new home on the other side of the world. And publication is slated for 2020.
Hey, more American stories.
God, isn't that weird, 2020? Like, the thing about the book world is that, like, you have to plan things in, like, 3 years in advance.
Yeah. 14 picked up Kristen Simmons' YA trilogy, The Valhalla Academy. The series is about an elite boarding school where students earn their keep running cons for their powerful headmaster, a girl from the wrong side of the tracks who gains admittance to their too-good-to-be-true world, and the real cost of success. Publication of the first book, The Price of Admission, is set for fall 2018.
Valhalla.
Wow.
I'm guessing that, like, this book is rooted in Norse mythology, considering it's Valhalla Academy, but
maybe.
Congratulations to Kristen Simmons. And next up, Aladdin Books bought world rights to Kat Zhang's debut picture book, Amy Wu and the Perfect Bao. The book follows a Chinese-American girl's quest to make the perfect bao dumpling. The book will be illustrated by Charlene Chua and published in fall 2019. Aw, this sounds adorable.
All balls are perfect because I eat them. And they're in that.
That's company. True. As long as they taste good, it's fine.
I bet that's the moral of the story. They all end up in the same place in my tummy. William Morrow at Harper Canada bought world English rights to Janie Chang's historical novel, Wandering Star, tentative title. Inspired by the experiences of the author's father, the book follows the exiled students and staff of a university forced to evacuate their campus in 1937 when Japan invades China. Publication is stated for May 2019.
Sounds heavy.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting time that's, you know, especially in the West, isn't as...
It's not really covered as
mainstream
much.
Mainstream covered, yeah. Especially in history books, because it doesn't have to do with America, per se. But it's, like, it was a big time of turmoil in Asia. Like, during the entire, like, first half of the 1900s, really.
Mm, interesting.
Yeah.
Next up, Wednesday Books acquired Janella Angelus' debut YA fantasy duology, Where Dreams Descend. Pitched as The Phantom of the Opera meets Moulin Rouge, the story follows Hellfire House's star showgirl, who, haunted by her dark past, must enter a magician's competition in order to secure her freedom from the handsome, enigmatic keeper of the club, even as mysterious accidents seem to plague her every move. The first book is slated for publication in 2020.
Oh.
Phantom of the Opera. Phantom of the Moulin Rouge Club.
Phantom of the Nightclub.
The actual series title is Where Dreams Descend. Just FYI.
We're just coming up with a log line. Salam Reads has bought world rights to two new novels by Saints and Misfits author S.K. Ali. Marvels and Oddities follows two Muslim teens during a trip to Doha, who learn to speak truth to power and open themselves up to the complexities of first love. Publication is set for summer of 2019.
And our last book deal news is Katie Zhao's debut middle grade novel, The Dragon Warrior, was bought by Bloomsbury. In the book, a 12-year-old girl wanting to find her place in a secret society of warriors embarks on a journey to fight her way through gods and demons in various Chinatowns in order to find a secret island where her missing father might be. Publication is planned for fall 2019 and 2020. Oh. So I'm guessing it's a series. This reminds me of Grace Lin's middle grade novels. I forgot the titles.
Or it also reminds me of Jackie Chan Adventures.
Oh my god, that show is amazing. I love that show growing up.
Yeah.
So if it's anything like that, yeah, I would like it.
Some other literary news and notable news, I guess. The 2018 Nobel Prize in Literature has been canceled, largely due to the accusations that were made against Jean-Claude Arnault, a major Swedish cultural figure who was married to a member of the Swedish Academy, author Katarina Frostenson.
So I heard that Arnault, he was accused, like, the allegations were made by, like, 18 different women. So,
oh wow.
Yeah, and I forgot like how many chairs there are in the Nobel, in the Swedish Academy that do the Nobel Prize. But I do know that they have to fill 12 seats after this incident because people resigned.
Wow. So this is like a Me Too thing. Huh?
Yeah, it's definitely a Me Too thing. And yeah, the reason why like it's going to take them a while to fill those seats is I heard that those seats are for life. Like, once you become like a Nobel chair member, like you're supposed to do that for life. You can resign, but...
So I haven't followed the story. So did they resign because of Arnault, or did they all resign because of accusations brought onto them?
They resigned because of Arnault. Okay. Like, they resigned because there were stories about him having him behaving... Well, I'm not sure about the details of sexual harassment, but he definitely had sexual misconduct in various Nobel Prize locations. Okay. So it's just like, oh, like he did this like during their watch. So a lot of the chair members, they resigned. And the 2017 Nobel Prize in Literature went to Kazuo Ishiguro.
Yeah, author of our December book.
He got it right before, right before they pushed it back for a year. So the 2019 Nobel Prize in Literature, they're going to announce two winners instead of just one. So it's not like they're not awarding anyone for that year. It's just they need to get their shit together before.
Yeah.
Announcing the award.
Kind of just clean house. Make sure everything passes the sniff test, right?
Yeah.
So something else that happened in the past month is, well, I mean, so since we've been running Books and Bulba, Rira's been really active on Twitter. And because of that, I get to see all the fun and not so fun things that happen.
Oh, fun.
In the literary world. Like, I didn't realize how prolific Asian American authors are on Twitter. I mean, they're like Fonda Lee, Celeste Ng, Ellen Oh, like
Jenny Han.
They're always not only commenting on literature, but on representation, on social justice, on a lot of subjects in a very like eloquent way because they're writers.
Yeah.
And something that happened during this past month is I forgot, like, I'm not 100% sure where it started, but like I guess a black author, she's a sci-fi author, I think.
Justine Ireland?
Yeah. Was going off on a rant about, I don't know, like white privilege or like something racist that happened. Or like something, like she was going off on a rant about something and then mentioning that basically in one of her tweets, in the thread mentioned that Asian women tend to be like pretty much making the argument that Asians are white adjacent and shouldn't be considered people of color.
See, I have not read the tweet, so I can't confirm that.
Well, she's deleted the tweet, so the original tweet's not there anymore.
Well, I know that Justine Ireland has championed a lot of like really great really great online discussion about diversity in literature and in media, and she's always been like very supportive of other authors from marginalized backgrounds, especially Asian American writers. And from what I understand, like she her tweets got misconstrued by a lot of trigger happy Twitter trolls, and somehow her words got twisted into Asian Americans don't count as people of color. And that sparked a whole conversation on Twitter.
Yeah. And that's the good and the bad of online discourse is sometimes these things, they spark conversation. But a lot of times it comes from a place of anger and hot takes.
Yeah.
And
it was definitely a hot take.
Someone always is on the receiving end, whether they deserve it or not. And sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't.
Yeah, I honestly think in this circumstance, Justine Ireland did not deserve a lot of the ire from the internet because I mean her tweet got deleted, so I And this happened like when I woke up from the, I was like, what happened on Twitter? Like everyone's talking about Asian Americans not like being people of color. And I was like, okay, something must have happened. But I mean, just judging from like past tweets and past conversations that she's had with the reader and author community, like I don't think she deserved the brunt of it. And I don't think she intended for people to take away from her tweet as like Asian Americans are not people of color. But it did bring up a good, like Marvin said, a good conversation starter.
Yeah, which at the end of the day, you know, at least that's it brings up at least something worth discussing that's got brought up. It took some digging to find.
Yeah, that it took some digging.
The instigating incident was from Justina Ireland, but that was after me reading like responses by a lot of authors just talking about how it brings up the I guess narrative that has been something that Asian Americans fight against constantly, which is the mono minority narrative, right? That because Asians are, you know, in the grand scheme of minorities in America, seen as better off, seen as middle class, sometimes people don't think our issues matter. And it totally erases the fact that Asian America, and this is something that the more you work in Asian American circles and organizations, the more you realize this, Asian American is not a cultural term.
No, definitely not.
It's a political term that was coined to bring together all these different people from different cultures and ethnicities. And like, there's like, what, like 40 plus different types of, probably even more, of cultures that fall into the Asian American or API umbrella. And some that don't even, you know, like on paper it might make sense because they're all from Asia. But if you look at it, it's like, there's so many different factors that make all these groups different, not just culturally, but also economically, socially.
And like also like a thing that came up a lot in like the Twitter conversations that stemmed from this was how anti-blackness has been a thing in Asian American communities. And that is something that needs to be rooted out. And also how often the Asian community is used to kind of be a wedge kind of have the white majority point and say, oh, these are the good minorities, and kind of create disparity.
And this is not discounting that, like, it doesn't happen. There are plenty of Asians who embrace these stereotypes and who totally subscribe to anti-darkness. Like you talk to any Asian parent. Not any, that's a hyperbole, but talk to, like, you know, there's someone in your family has told you before, like, stay out of the sun, you'll get dark, right?
Yeah. And
as if being dark is a bad thing.
Yeah. Right? And another thing is just, like Marvin said, like, there's so many ethnicities, there's so many different cultures under the Asian, like under that term, Asian American, and we sometimes forget like South Asians get a lot of shit, and they are considered to be a part of Asian Americana and
Southeast Asians
too. I mean, like, you know, they have a much darker skin tone than us, and of course there's shadism and there's colorism.
I mean, for a lot of Southeast Asians who came as refugees, like the reason they immigrate is totally different. Like, you know, a lot of East Asian families came for jobs or education,
depending on what year they immigrated.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Refugee families came because they have no more home, and you know, it's another reason why representation matters, right? Like, we've read stories like and What Lies Between Us, and even stories like The Leavers, where it tells the stories of like the poor immigrants who come here for opportunity, and also the fact that even if you are like as assimilated as possible, you still are seen as an outsider to a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it was very interesting just catching up on this conversation. And it, like, definitely made me think about, like, I was like, okay, well, like, I'm East Asian American and I am not in poverty. And, like, I am from a middle class family. There is so much stuff that there's so much privilege that I have personally. But at the same time, I still get called, like, racist things. And that doesn't make it any, like, any less bad. But yeah, it's, yeah, which brings us to another, like Twitter storm that happened. Like, it literally happened this afternoon. Like, while I was leaving, it was happening on Twitter. And I was just like, okay.
I haven't been on Twitter all day. So
okay, well, yeah. So this one writer-illustrator said pretty much, like, the trope of princesses and chosen ones in YA fiction is problematic because it teaches young readers that girls born without privilege should pretty much saying that, like, girls born without privilege aren't worth getting spotlit. Like, it's just like, oh, you are only the chosen one because you were born into privilege. And that started a whole different conversation by authors who are from marginalized communities, because it's like, yeah, it's a trope, but we don't get that many Black, Asian, queer princesses or chosen ones. We don't get those cliche stories, like, for lack of the better word. It's easy to call it a trope when you've seen that version of yourself 100-200 times in books. Like, I would read a book with a Black Harry Potter. I would read a book with, like, an Asian princess who is, like, who's, like, the chosen one who has been lost and forgotten and must save the world.
I mean, I feel like chosen ones typically come from, like, impoverished situations, right? That's the trope, is that they're like the diamond in the rough, right? They're like the chosen one is never, like, you know, the one raised to be the chosen one, because that's usually the rival slash bad guy, right? That's the Draco Malfoy of the story. The chosen one is usually, like, people, they usually have to prove themselves too, right?
I mean, like, the example that a lot of people who agreed with the whole, like, oh, this is a tired trope, like, a lot of people used Rey from Star Wars as, like, an example. It's like, oh, she's a nobody, and I like that. And a lot of people who are from marginalized backgrounds were like, yeah, that's great and all, but we still deserve, like characters who are royal and powerful and pretty much look like us.
Are you telling me Rey's not the chosen one because she totally is a chosen one trope? She has, like, insane powers for someone who is, like,
I guess what
nowhere.
They meant was, like, oh, she's not, like, from a rich class, she's not royal, and, like, it's like whatever. But like, growing up,
I mean,
like,
Buffy was a chosen one and she wasn't from, like, a rich lineage of warriors or whatever.
I mean, it just brings up the point that they're, like, even though there's been this growth of, like, diverse authors, and we're getting more protagonists of color and of marginalized backgrounds, there's not that much. And it's not to a point where we can say, oh, like, that's a trope. Like, don't want to see it anymore. It's like, I would like to see more Asian princesses and Asian chosen ones in YA fiction, because I never had that growing up. I had to rely to read a lot of books by white people, and and those children books had white characters, and I'm like, okay, well, I guess this is my proxy, and like, I just have to use my imagination. And, like, it sucks that's what I had to rely on when I was growing up. But kids nowadays, they are getting more choices, and, you know, I think it's important. And
I can see what the point they're trying to make. But at the same time, like, it's not that simple.
I mean, okay, let's be honest. Like, Mulan, like, that was a racist movie. Like, there was some racist things about that movie. But that was the first time I saw, like, an Asian like an Asian character who was like the protagonist who like was able to pull off like really like badass moves and was independent and smart. Like you don't see that or you didn't see that back then. And that was the only option. I mean, now I'm like, yeah, Mulan was okay, but I need to squint in order to like to like kind of erase the racist things around it.
Rewatched it recently, and I remember that the song where they're talking about bring honor to your family. I'm like, oh, did they actually sing that? Was that actually the song? And like the most popular song in the entire movie is "Be a Man."
Yeah. I mean, it's a really catchy song. But,
super catchy.
But yeah, there are some problematic things about that song.
I like the, I like listening to the Jackie Chan version from the Chinese soundtrack.
It sounds so bad.
No, it's not that bad.
It sounds bad, like singing-wise. I don't think Jackie Chan's a great singer.
He's a pop star.
I don't know. I don't think he has a great singing voice. But yeah, like there are some... Like, kids nowadays, they deserve a more, I don't know, more nuanced representation, and they deserve to have, like more than one option.
Yeah. Well, on that note, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Don't forget our May book club pick, as we mentioned multiple times this episode, is The Leavers by Lisa Coe. We'll be discussing that at the end of the month. I'm looking forward to getting back into that book. Don't forget to join our Books and Boba Goodreads forums, where you can discuss books with fellow members and also let us know what you think about Asian American literature or any of the topics that we covered during this episode. Thanks again, Rira, for compiling all the new releases and news.
Thank you, book bloggers on Twitter, for aiding me in this search.
But yeah, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
This episode of Books and Boba was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu, and edited by Marvin Yue. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from our Asian American community. If you like Books and Boba, you might also want to check out The Collabcast, a weekly podcast about pop culture and the creative life from an Asian American perspective, and the official podcast of the collaboration movement. You can find The Collabcast and all the other great shows of The Collective by going to the website www.podcastpotluck.com.